Welcome to Wabanaki Windows. I'm your host, Donna Loring. This series will focus on the hidden elements that have influenced Wabanaki history, from the invasion of our shores in the 18th century to the land claims and beyond. Today, we will be talking about the hidden element of blood quantum and the influence it plays in the development of our tribal communities, membership numbers, and our very identities. This is a highly controversial subject, and we realize there are no easy answers. We can only give you a glimpse of history and our perspectives. My guests today are Professor Darren Ranko, who is a member of the Penobscot Nation, Professor of Anthropology, and Chair of the Native American Studies at the University of Maine. Our special guest today is Morgan Talte. He's also a member of the Penobscot Nation and an award-winning author of Night of the Living Res and his latest book, Fire Exit. Morgan is currently teaching creative writing at the University of Maine. Welcome to the show. As I always like to do, we will start our conversation on blood quantum by looking first at its history and then what we perceive as its present and future effects on tribal identity. Okay, Darren, could you start us out on this topic of blood quantum and, you know, maybe give us a little background, a little history?
Sure. This is a difficult topic for Native people to engage. I think it's so firmly associated with our identities at this point that it's one of those, like, how do you decolonize your mind and how do we come up with a way to represent ourselves that comes from who we are? Very clearly, blood quantum is associated with European notions of race and racial theory and racial prejudice. The first sort of law in North America associated with this comes from 1705 in Virginia, from the English colony in Virginia, and they were defining mulatto. So the idea is that and they were defining mulatto as a way to limit the rights of people who are in this racial category, preventing them from holding public office. So they were already trying to, like, associate this with the whole complex of race, right? So of Negro, right, as African American or Black, right, and Indians, right? And so very early on, this idea of blood quantum, even quantifying blood, comes from an English common law tradition, but that stretches back, you know, even before 1705, hundreds of years in sort of English common law and notion. So it is very clearly not a representation that comes from us as Indigenous people. This is a hugely colonial framework. You know, I think the hardest question to answer, perhaps, and this is, you know, because, like, you could ask the question, why has it persisted? You know, and I think that's the harder kind of piece to answer. I will say this, and sometimes people think I'm defending blood quantum when I say this. I'm not. I think the system is clearly colonial in its nature, but I think one of the reasons why it persists beyond, and I think we'll talk probably about sort of trauma legacies within Indigenous communities that sort of allow it to persist. But I think the other thing, even in a positive way, is that as a way to talk about our identities as Indigenous people, blood quantum can fill in very important ways to kin. So kinship in a colonial American English context, that blood is a biogenetic substance that is measured or doled out. It can stand in for what I think most Indigenous people would say is key to their identities, is who are you related to?
The whole purpose of this quarter blood status thing is to eliminate tribal members, keep the numbers down, and eventually eliminate us.
Yeah. Well, and that And that's, you know, as I mentioned, that was sort of starting at the end of the 19th century, that those very explicit, right, framework of extermination of indigenous people. It was part of, you know, allotment, right, and the federal policy. But, you know, you see this, in Maine, as you mentioned, in the 40s, 1940s, through that transcript. But with the frameworks of blood quantum, they can see the diminishing, you know, oh, we're going to breed ourselves out of existence kind of framework to it, but they don't see how it's been so directly manipulated in the last 150 years by federal and state governments to basically take from us. Like, and that's like that's the overwhelming evidence around it, as, you know, again, asking the question, why do we persist in using it ourselves, right? So, yeah.
Well, you know, the other piece of that is we do their dirty work for them. You know, we're saying it's like we're taking the gun. Hey, give me that gun. I'll do it myself. You know, we're getting rid of our own people. I don't know if it's Stockholm syndrome or what it is, but I think that what happened was that you only have so much pie, so you guys have to figure it out. And here's a way to do it. You know, this is how you can get more. And that mentality has sort of taken root in our tribal communities, and it's really infested us so that we're fighting each other. And now, you know, we're finally seeing what the heck's going on. And we are sovereign, and we do have that right to decide who's a tribal member and who isn't. And it is time. It's time for tribal communities, or at least ours, to take a really close look at how this is affecting us and has affected us and will affect us in the future.
Who's the minority here, right? Like in this area, and like it's almost like the tribes were saying. I mean, not the tribes, but the court, you know, looked these took into consideration. Well, it's like, oh, well, there's fewer natives here, so this is just my rationale because none of these court cases ever make any sense. It's just like they're like, well, there's fewer natives here, so why would we give the fewer the more power, you know?